Sat Paramahamsa Prabhujakacharya Ashtotar Sapashishanad. The Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Kota Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. Iskand Founder Acharya Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gopremanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutada Shumadeva Akti Vinanta Swami Nityanamne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vacharane Nira Vishesha Sunyavari Paschat Stay Satani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 40, the prayers of Akura. Text number 6 and 7. So we chant 6. Word meanings, Eke, some, Twa, to you, Akila, all, Karmani, activities, Sannyasa, resigning, Upasamam, peace, Gata, attaining, Ganina, pursuers of knowledge, Ganaya, Gaina, by the sacrifice of cultivating knowledge, Yajanti, they worship Jnana Vigraham, the embodiment of knowledge. Ekatva kila karmani,
Ekatva kila karmani,
Sanyasyo pasamam gata,
Sanyasyo pasamam gata,
Jnanino Jnana Yajena, Yajajanti Jnana Vigraham,
Yajajanti Jnana Vigraham,
Ekatva Kila Karmani,
Eva Kila Karmani,
Sanyasyo Pasamam Gata,
Sanyasyo Pasamam Gata,
Jnanino Jnana Yajnena,
Jnanino Jnana Yajnena,
Yajanti Jnana Vigraham,
Yajajanti
Eke Twakila Karmani,
Eke Twakila Karmani,
Sanyasyo Pasamam Gata,
Sanyasyo Pasamam Gata,
Jnani no Jnana Vigyena,
Jnani no Jnana Vigyena,
Yajanti Jnana Vigraham,
Yajanti Jnana Vigraham.
Yeah.
Translation purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. In pursuit of spiritual knowledge, some persons renounce all material activities, and having thus become peaceful, perform the sacrifice of philosophic investigation to worship you, the original form of all knowledge. Purport, modern philosophers pursue knowledge without bothering to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus they naturally end up with meager, if not trivial, results. Text number 7. Anyecha samskritatmano vidvidvidina vitenate yagyanti tva maya tvavai baho morteka mortikam. Translation, and yet others, whose intelligence is pure, follow the injunctions of Vaishnava scriptures promulgated by you. Absorbing their minds in thought of you, they worship you as the supreme, they worship you as the one supreme Lord manifesting in multiple forms. Purport, the word samskritatmana, those who worship, those whose intelligence is pure, is significant here. It implies that the worshippers mentioned before have not completely purified their intelligence of material contamination, and thus they worship the Lord indirectly. Those who are purified, however, directly worship the Lord either as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, or as one of his various plenary forms, such as Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Parjumna, or Aniruddha, as indicated here. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunnilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So these are the prayers of Akura after his wonderful vision of Krishna in the water of the Jamuna. Often we find that when Krishna reveals himself, he prepares the devotee in different ways for that revelation. For instance, they'll be instructed, go take your bath and then come back, and then the revelation will be there. Some preparation like that is often necessary because there's some qualification for having the darshan, the vision, to being the Lord appearing before you. It's not an ordinary thing, and it's not something which is attainable by our own endeavor, our own senses. Our senses are limited in that way. We can't perceive the Supreme Lord with our intelligence or with our blunt senses. Therefore, you speak of it in terms of revelation, and for something to be revealed to you, you need to be prepared for such revelation. On Friday, Tamaharpur was giving a class, and he was talking about prayer and the structure of prayers, how we find patterns in the Srimad Bhagavatam of how prayers are constructed to glorify the Supreme Lord. So following that line, I was thinking, as we look at these two prayers of Akura, about how the value of prayers that we find in the Bhagavatam, because it's actually through the prayers that we get the revelation of the Supreme Personality of God. We get knowledge how to perceive Him. And Akura, indeed, is saying that here. He's talking about, in the verse 6, those who sort of follow an impersonalistic path and get some revelation of the Supreme in that way. And in text 7, of how the Vaishnava scriptures are revealed and the personality of Godhead is revealed to those who follow those paths. Both of them, however, are dependent upon something outside our senses, our mind, our intelligence, our use of logic, to be able to understand the revelation of the Supreme Lord. And that's the point I want to talk about today, because what the Lord does, or how he appears to us, is through the Vedic knowledge. Through Vedic knowledge. When Prabhupada comments, his introduction to the Sri Ishopanishad is very interesting, because it's about the Vedas. Now I was wondering, why does Prabhupada talk about the Vedas? You know, why does he focus much of that introduction on the limitation that we have in terms of our senses? You know, there are four defects that are mentioned there. I'm sure most people here are familiar with the four defects that are mentioned in that lecture that Prabhupada gave at Conway Hall in London. And how these defects prevent us from getting knowledge, especially perfect knowledge. And so then there's a suggestion there about how to get perfect knowledge. Does anybody know what that suggestion is? How we get perfect knowledge?
Hear from the right source.
Yeah, you hear from the right source. Shabda Brahman. If the source is perfect, then you can get perfect knowledge. Our own investigation of it won't reveal that to us. And so the Vedas are accepted as a perfect source of knowledge. They are a Purusheya. It means they don't have a human origin. Purusheya, human being, human origin, is defective in the four ways. But Apurusheya doesn't have those defects, therefore it's perfect knowledge. And so we can get knowledge from that perfect source by hearing from the correct authorities. And so therefore, whether one follows an impersonalistic path, as indicated in text 6, or the Vaishnava path, as indicated in text number 7, both are dependent upon a perfect source of knowledge beyond this material world, and that is accepted to be the Vedas. So today I want to give a quick overview of the entire Vedic literatures. Now, I don't know if that's possible, but I do want to attempt that, because I think that it's interesting information, at least, what to speak of the knowledge that's contained there. So, Vedic knowledge. I found a nice little chart on ISKCON Desire Tree, which you can find everything you want. And the chart nicely breaks down Vedic knowledge. And I want to make one point right here. Here at the very beginning, because when we talk about the Vedas, sometimes there's this misconception that the Vedas are Shruti and they're not Smriti. But that point is roundly trounced by our acharyas. Vedic knowledge includes Shruti and Smriti, equal authority. Yes, really? Okay. Well, we'll explain as best as we can. And you can also explain after class, because there's a lot of words in the Vedas. And Shruti means to hear, as I was saying. How are we going to get perfect knowledge? We're going to have to hear it, oral reception, if it's coming from a perfect source. And so the Vedic knowledge has these two forms. The revealed absolute knowledge, where that's unchanging now, despite the different creations that take place of the universe. There are unchanging There's unchanging knowledge, and that's the Vedas. And they start with the sound. The sound and the sequence are always the same. That's unchanging. The sound and the sequence are always the same. That's Shruti. Now, the other branch, Smriti, are composed works of great sages. Composed works of great sages. And they may change from time to time. There may be some differences in them. They're not unchanging like the Shruti. But as I mentioned, our teachers, our line of teachers, our acharyas from the past, they've concluded that Shruti and Smriti both have equal weight. Now, when some people study the Vedas, they give more emphasis to the Shruti, or what's heard, because that's unchanging. And because Smriti, or what is literally remembered, isn't it? Smriti, remembered, or what's remembered or composed, as I mentioned, that changes from time to time. And so sometimes when people study the Vedas, they give more emphasis to the unchanging Shruti rather than the Smriti. But our teachers, as I say, have rejected that idea and put forth the understanding that both are the same. Vedas and the Vedic literatures are the same. They have the same authority. And the authority for what? What's the purpose of the Vedas? To reveal knowledge of the Supreme, to reveal God, its existence. And so Shruti and Smriti. And it's going to get a little technical here, but just for your knowledge, so you can say that you've heard it someplace at some time. And you could spend your whole life studying it. So when we talk about the Vedas or Shruti, we mainly mean the four original Vedas, the Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Vedas. Now, these Vedas primarily, or let's say not primarily, but largely deal with three areas: Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Upasana Kanda. Different divisions. Karma, material elevation. Karma Kanda, material elevation. What you can do to materially elevate yourself. Jnana means knowledge, so Jnana Kanda means decreasing material involvement through the study of knowledge. And Upasana Kanda means also decreasing material involvement, but through worship of the Supreme Lord. So these are three major divisions of the Vedas. Now, you might be interested to know that it's indicated in certain parts of the Vedas that the four Vedas consist of approximately 100,000 verses, but presently there are only around 20,000 of them available. In other words, they've been lost over the course of time. And they mainly deal with these four Vedas, Yajur, Rig, Sama, and Atharva, primarily deal with this idea of Karma Kanda, or material elevation, sacrifices that one performs, worship of the demigods to increase in one's power or position for reaching heaven, and so on. These are the main subject matter of these four Vedas in terms of the amount of the percentage of the work. The import may be different, but that's covered in a less number of verses. So the primary bulk of the verses of these four Vedas are meant for material elevation through the performance of karma, kanda activities, and worship of the demigods. Now, there are other sections of the Vedas that, there are various sections of the Vedas that present this. There are the Samhitas, which are the hymns. Generally, when we think about the Vedas, we think about the hymns of the Vedas, like that. And so, hymn of the Vedas that are part of the Samhitas that we're familiar with is the Purusha Shukta. A lot of times that's used in our deity worship, for instance, Purusha Shukta. And so this is a collection of prayers that are mainly written in like a rhyme, written in poetic verse. But all the Vedas aren't poetic verse. There are some, like the Samhitas, that are poetic verse. But there's a lot of prose written. Just like in the fifth canto, we get prose rather than the poetic verses that we read today. So in the Vedas, much of it is prose. And different things are explained in that prose. There are, for instance, the Brahmanas and the Aranyakshas. We're really getting into like a lot of technical words here today. I'm sorry, but I didn't plan for a lot of for guests that would be unfamiliar. So please bear with me as we go through this. The Brahmanas are accompanying texts to the Vedas, and they give additional directions and details to the Brahmins, the priests, when they're performing the sacrifices. You know, we have the sacrifice, we have fire sacrifice that we use. But there are many types of Vedic sacrifices, and they involve certain mantras and practices. And so the Brahmanas section of the Vedas, they give direction for these things. Actually, they're kind of explanations of the rituals. They're the rituals which are described in the four Vedas, and the Brahmanas are part of those four Vedas, and they explain the rituals, why you're doing this, why you're doing that. And the Aranyakshas, which are similar to the Brahmanas, they also offer explanation, but they give more of the esoteric meanings of these things. And a lot of times we hear that how the Vedas were kept out of the hands of the common person and reserved in that way, restricted. It's because of these esoteric meanings and explanations that we find in the Aranyakshas, for instance, that caused those that knew, had this knowledge, to want to keep it from others. The Aranyakshas reveal more of the esoteric aspects of the rituals and their purposes than the Brahmanas. They are meant only for the Brahmana priests and Kshatriya warriors who have renounced all material activities and retired to the solitude of the forest, which is the meaning of Aranyaka. So they include which mantras to use for particular purposes, how to sit, in which time of the morning to practice, the devotions to incorporate into practice, and so on. So these are technical instructions about the Vedas. But again, mainly focusing on these karma kanda kind of ideas which are involved material elevation, material betterment, like that. I mean, comparatively, like in the world today, which is not a Vedic world, we engage in all kinds of material education and material activities, economic development, for material elevation. In the Vedic culture, these sacrifices were used for material elevation. So these are technical things, again, in this karma kanda section, but then there's the jnana kanda, which is for decreasing one's involvement in this material world, for developing detachment. And for that, we have the Upanishads. The Upanishads are probably the most famous word when people talk about Vedic literature. Because they are essentially meant for spiritual progress of the individual as opposed to the material benefit. Now, originally, there were more Upanishads available in the Vedic literatures than there are present. Now there are about, according to this research, around 200, but there were previously many more Vedas than that available. The Upanishads were considered secret and confidential knowledge of reality. They mainly focused on the absolute as non-material and described it as Brahmand, the eternal unmanifest reality, source and ultimate shelter of everything. They tend to be impersonal. The Upanishads tend to be impersonal, although not all the Upanishads are impersonal. There are a couple of them particularly. Of course, Prabhupada commented on the Isha Upanishad, which presents the supreme reality, both personal and impersonal. And then there's the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, which has numerous verses which specifically mention Krishna. There's one verse, Sri Krishna, that supreme deity, the paramount eternal reality among all other sentient beings, and the fountain source of consciousness to all conscious beings. And so, the Gopal Tapani Upanishad is particularly points out to Krishna. One interesting side point here is that our Vaishnavacharyas have mainly commented on, don't generally comment on the Upanishads, but there are a couple, and one of them is that Gopal Tapani Upanishad, where Baladev Vijayabhushan has a commentary on this Upanishad. So it's, again, generally not commented on by our Vaishnavacharyas, but there are a few commentaries available. Yes?
There's a Chaitanya Upanishad.
Chaitanya Upanishad, yes. Of course, there are other divisions of the Vedas. Just quickly here with Pallad and Sringa here, I can't help but mention that there's different Vedic sciences like Jyotish. Now these are part of the Vedangas. They're angas or branches of the Vedas. It's interesting that on this chart here that I have composed by one of our devotees, they have Jyotish listed as different than the Upavedas, which include the Dhunur Veda, Ayurveda, etc. It's in a different category. It's a Vedanga, not one of the Upa Vedas. So that's interesting. But as I mentioned, the Upanishads are where the philosophical knowledge is in the Vedas, and so that's we'll use as a branch to go to the Smriti, or the composed Vedic knowledge, composed by sages, as opposed to the Shruti that we've been talking about, which is a heard knowledge. In the Smriti, we find a number of divisions, including the Pancharatras, the Puranas, the Itihasas, and the six Darshanas. So let's focus on the six Darshanas for a minute. These are different philosophical paths that we find for studying the Vedas. They are Vedanta, Mimamsa, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Yoga, and Sankhya. So Vedanta, we're familiar with the Vedanta. Vedanta sutras are commentaries on the Upanishads. So the Vedanta sutras are metaphysical knowledge analysis of the Upanishads. And the Vedanta Sutras are important because all the acharyas or teachers in the past have commented on this work and established their understanding of the absolute truth, either as it's described here in text 6 as impersonal, or as it's described in text 7, the personal understanding of the Lord. So which is higher? What's the actual teachings of the Vedas? Is it impersonal or is it personal? If we want to battle that out, we can go to the Vedanta Sutras and see, just like Baladev did. There was once a challenge to the Vaishnavas in Jaipur, and the challenge was, if you're bona fide with your understanding and your worship of the deities, then where is your commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, or the philosophical teachings of the Upanishads? There wasn't one. Why wasn't there one? Who knows why there wasn't one at that point in time?
Like Mahaprabhu was saying to Prakashananda Saraswati, it's no need, because the Vedanta was so clear to Vishnu that they removed Vishnu slowly, slowly with other words until it became impersonal. But like Lord Chaitanya said, the same said to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, is no need for an interpretation. The Vedanta is so clear because it's Anta, is the final part of knowledge. The Vishnu is the ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
And Kali Yuga removed the name, like you were saying, and slowly, slowly goes into something else.
Right. Yes, as Vladimir Sringer was saying, Lord Chaitanya accepted that Vyasadeva's Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, so there's no necessity for the to have a separate commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And so the challenge was there. You're not bona fide. Where's your commentary on Vedanta Sutra? And so therefore, Baladev Vijayabhushan, under the direction of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, received inspiration from the Govindaji deity, and Govindaji actually dictated to him the Shubhashya, which is the Vaishnava commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Govinda Bhashya. Well, it's called Sri Bhashya in different places also. Mm. So, Govinda Bhashya was given, that's the Gaudiya commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which is a commentary on the Upanishads of the Vedas. So, Vedanta Sutra, and then another branch of the Smriti are the Puranas, and we know that there are different kinds of Puranas. There are Upapuranas, and there are the complete Puranas, Upapuranas being smaller works containing 5 subject matters as compared to the 10 subject matters of a Purana. Mahapuranas and Upapuranas. The Mahapuranas are divided into 3 groups related to the modes of nature. And so they are, let's see here. In the lower modes of nature, the Tamaguna, there are 3 Puranas, the Linga, Skanda, Agni, Matsya, Kurma, and Shiva. In the mode of passion, there are the Brahma, Brahmanda, Brahma Bhavarta, Markandeya, Bhavishya, and Vamana Puranas. And in the mode of goodness, the Sattvic Puranas are the Vishnu Purana, the Bhagavat Purana, Narada or Naradiya, Garuda, Padma, and Vraha Puranas. And if, for instance, there is some contradiction, the reason why I mentioned them as Tamagun, Rajagun, and Sattvagun, is because sometimes we find in the Vedas contradictions or contradictory statements. And so then which has more weight or more authority? So the Puranas in the mode of goodness they carry more authority, and so if there's some contradictory statements between what we find, say, in a sattvic purana versus a rajastic or tamistic purana, the authority goes to the sattva guna purana. And so that's part of the interpretation, because as I mentioned, shastra will always involve some contradictions when there are so many hundreds of thousands of verses. Some contradiction will be there, and so there are rules established how to decide what authority governs in a particular situation. And so this rule is there in terms of the Puranas. If there is conflict, then we go to the accept as better authority, the sattvic Puranas. And indeed, even in the Shruti, there are different Vedangas that are used to determine what to solve contradictions, contradictory statements that are there. There's Nirukta, which is study of the etymology of words, what the true meaning is. There's Vyakarana, or grammar, which is also used to clarify what the true meaning of a text is. So therefore, as you were mentioning, sometimes there are adjustments or interpretations in one way to get a particular answer or to support a particular viewpoint. But if all the rules are applied, then the true meaning can come forth. And that's what we find in the works of Vyasadeva, who compiled all these literatures and the Vedas and divided them. We know the history. And ultimately, out of his own realization, his dissatisfaction with his work, and then his realization as instructed by Narada, he put forth the ultimate conclusion of all the Vedic literatures, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the topic is glorification of Lord Sri Krishna and developing our ultimate relationship with him. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the cream of Vedic literature. It's risen to the top from all these different things that we've presented an overview of, and gives the essence of Srimad, of the goal of life, and ultimate perfection can be found in its text, particularly in the 10th canto of that work. So that's a quick overview of the Vedic knowledge. So does anyone have any comments or questions?
Just two questions. You mentioned that the Samhitas are part of the Vedas and considered Shruti, and then some people don't accept the Smritis because they are changing and remembered. So is Brahma Samhita, because it's a Samhita, is that accepted as a Shruti?
Well, Samhita, no, Brahma Samhita is not part of the Shruti. But Samhita means a collection of prayers, so it doesn't necessarily, when we say Brahma Samhita, it doesn't necessarily mean it's part of the original.
And then the second question was, there are these schools of philosophy in the Vedas, the Sankhya, Vaisheshika, Mimamsa, and then the Vedanta. So then all these six schools, they all accept Shruti, Smriti, and Vedanta Sutra. Is that right? But they have their own interpretations in six different ways?
Well, they may accept them, but they may give different authority to them. Some may perpetuate this idea, as I mentioned, that Shruti is a superior authority to Smriti. Others may reject that idea. But all of them accept these elements of the Vedic literature, pantheon, yes, the original Vedas and Smriti. So,
and then finally, why is it that the Shruti is not unequivocal about Krishna's position?
Well, it is, but it's hidden. As Dravida Prabhu mentioned, there not only is the Gopaltapani Upanishad there, but the Chaitanya Upanishad is there. It's there, but it's a jewel. It's the crest jewel of the entire literature, and so therefore it's protected. It's not just it's not so cheap a thing that it's just there. You have to be qualified to get the hidden treasure that's there in the Vedas, and so it's not that it's not there in the Shruti. It's there also, but it's hidden. It's a confidential understanding. Yes.
Can I say something?
Please.
That also we have to see that it's four yugas, and everything was 100% clear in the first one. And slowly come to Kali Yuga with the introduction of Niti, and then people become less than animals, because animals at least follow nature. So then the intelligence is not illuminated anymore. So Vyasadeva was trying to basically at least give them some elevation. Because after Swargaloka, this is Gyanaloka and Taparloka, and eventually through Brahmaloka, you can see the Sunupasana Kanda also to that path. So at least that, because the only thing they want is heaven. But due to the mercy of Lord Krishna and Lord Gauranga, and it's this particular Kali Yuga, then the incarnation of Lord Krishna's literary form also, like Prabhu was including so nicely, went through all this whole tour to bring us Srimad Bhagavatam. But as Prabhu keeps saying, that at the beginning the word reveal, the word velo, one can see through the cloth, the velo. So Krishna can see us perfectly, but we cannot see him. So unless we really want to love him and love his devotees, how are we going to enter into his entourage? It's so private, it's so divine, we cannot be perturbed with the wrong mentality. So it's so nicely brought by Srila Prabhupada, and slowly we are getting the vision. And it's so nice that Krishna every day opened the veil. Thank you.
One nice comment on
in the beginning of his Namashtaka, Rupa Goswami has a verse, Nikala Shruti Mala Ratnamala, describing how the crown jewels of all the Vedas and all the Vedic literatures, he describes there as understood to be the Upanishads. So the crown jewels, so the effulgence emanating from those crown jewels is like a big lamp. Like in LA, they used to do 16, sometimes you see them. And that fulgence is worshipping the tips of the toes of the holy name of Krishna. Which is, in other words, that's the essence of the whole thing. But in Kali Yuga, we have to cut to the chase. You know, we can't go over all the Vedas and even the Vedanta is too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been given this great opportunity. Vajitana has made it so easy. Chant Hare Krishna and everything will be revealed.
Thank you. Trevor, come behind you, Trevor.
Few points. So the Vedas up to the end of Dwarpa Yuga was in sound, or sound vibration, and it was under true from through the sages and the suttas and so forth. But it was put into writing at the beginning of Kali Yuga, the end of Dwarpa Yuga. I read somewhere, but I couldn't remember, that when it's coming through word and mouth, there's chances for interpolation like that. And I don't know if you've heard anything like this, and you could cheer some light on that.
Well, due to the defective nature of the living entities, conditioned souls in this world, there's always a chance that things will be misunderstood or misconstrued. I mean, even during Vedic times, when they were doing sacrifices, they had different priests, and they were chanting the Vedic hymns, but there was one priest particular that whose job was to make sure that they were chanting correctly, and if they weren't, he would stop, and they would go over. So that's because we're defective, and there could be some mistake. So there always can be that mistake in the literatures. So whether a particular shastra things are added or subtracted and things like that, I mean, I can't say. I mean, but can that happen? Sure. Well, due to our defective nature, one of the defects is what? The cheating propensity. So we want to do that. And so therefore, if you study, and therefore you find debate going on, say between the impersonalists and the personalists, so you have much debate goes on about the meaning of a particular word. And there are, as I mentioned, rules, how you interpret, not just that you can do anything. Oh, I think this means that, and then, well, what's your authority for thinking like that? What's the rule you're applying? And so when that goes on, we find particularly, and I should mention that also other literatures following in the same conclusion of the Vedas are also Vedic literatures, like Chaitanya Charitamrita, for instance. Like we find Chaitanya Charitamrita where there's debate between an impersonalist point of view and a personalist point of view. Different arguments are given, acharyas are given. And so those are valid Vedic arguments, and they establish the truth. They make clear again what is the real meaning of something, as Prabhupada said, Bhagavad Gita, as it is. Why is it that no one gave... The purpose of Bhagavad Gita was lost. No one was becoming a devotee by reading it. But when they read Prabhupada, so many devotees came. Why? Because the real meaning of Bhagavad Gita was there. In other words, you say, oh, this is your interpretation. Swami Bhaktivedanta is giving this. No, it's as it is, and therefore it's acting as it is. It's making people devotees of Krishna. And so that's the... I think that's good.
So the Bhagavad Purana is different, I'm assuming, than the Bhagavatam. Sometimes it seems like we say the Bhagavatam as the Bhagavad Purana, but
it's... Well, the Puranas, Bhagavad Purana was there, but then it was recomposed after Vyasadeva's realization. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam.
So then there is a separate book, one of those in the mode of goodness called Bhagavad Purana.
Well, what you'll find, I don't know.
Because sometimes the word is interchanged as Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Bhagavat Purana, but then yet it is...
Well, I don't know whether there is Bhagavat Purana existing separate from Srimad Bhagavatam after Vyasa, because Vyasadeva is the author. And as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, he first composed the Puranic, all the Puranas, and then he had his realization, and then he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. So whether that Bhagavat Purana is still existing separate from the Srimad Bhagavatam, I don't know.
I mean, that's what I understood, that he wrote all the other Puranas, and Mahabharata, and the Vedas, and the Upanishads, and he was dissatisfied, and then he wrote the Bhagavad Purana, and that was the last thing he wrote.
So that's part of the mode of goodness.
Yeah. It's in it, but it's really, is it not?
Yeah.
It's part of one of the in the mode of goodness, pure goodness. In that case. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all listed in the end in the 12th chapter.
Your class reminded me of a statement that Prabhupada requested. He said that we should study these books like a lawyer knows his law books. So perhaps that training you had was now moved into that Prabhupada's...
Well, I don't know. We lost our guest pretty quickly, so I don't know what the value of my class was.
Last thing about the Upavedas, when you mentioned the Jyotish, one part of astrology is Muhurta, and was very important for all this precise chanting and also for precise timing, to able to perform different kinds of samskaras.
Mm.
So to able to achieve, to able to touch a particular deity in a particular place, location, has to be done in a particular time. Just like we have time lapses between America and Europe, the same as was special time to reach. But just like a tree, like the Vedic is compared like a tree, has his roots and then his branches. Looks like the root is the source, but the branches they nurture from the light, like photosynthesis. And like we think that from the ground we get magnesium, etc., but actually come from the space that is absorbed by the branches or by the leaves even, and then brought it through the root. So the same, all the different parts of the Vedas are to serve Vishnu. But somehow or other we separate them, and we think in the economic development separated.
Mm.
Everything was, even the enjoyment was the festivals, was the Utsahal, the festivals of Vishnu. Mm. Everything is connected with Vishnu, but in Kali Yuga we separate this and then we try to find meaning to our own enjoyment.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wanted to bring this point up actually because, and it mentions on this list that Jyotish, where it's mentioned here, says astronomy, time calculation. And that's important because it may mean here, now I don't know whether the whole science of Jyotish could be considered an Upaveda, or we have to consider the Vedanga, but maybe listing it here under the Vedangas is indicating that, yes, whenever there's some sacrifice, it has to be done at the right time, and so that Anga has to be consulted.
Yeah.
And the whole science of Jyotish may be more like Dhanurveda or Ayurveda or something like that.
See. Yeah.
And so, but there, it's interesting because there are different things that we do. Just, I was thinking about Dravida. I'm surprised I see him at this moment because I was thinking about him when I was preparing this class. I didn't know you were coming. But how, when you give class, you always, first of all, you chant Nasta Prayushu Vajra Sunichim Bhagavata Seva. These verses, this is the Vedic practice. The Vedic practice is you just don't sit down and start speaking, but you give some glorification of the Bhagavatam, of the person first, before you sit down and speak. And you also give, we see like in different Vedic sacrifices, when there's a marriage or something, they give the calculation in such and such varsha, at such and such time, because all that help orientate the heavens, if you will, in connection with what's going on. The Vedas, they're controlled by a certain deity, a certain chanda or meter that it has to be pronounced in, and all these things have to be in line for to get the real effect. And so all these things we see are of Vedic origin. I was thinking of you. Because you give the time and the date and everything when you give class, and so it's all part of that's the Vedic influence in what we do. It's not just some speculation. So I think we should end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.